Paper 12, Denise. For those of you who hadn't noticed, we did get a late comment letter on this. Did everybody get a chance to look at the FRC letter?
Hard copies.
I think you all, oh, they gave them all hard copies in addition to the email? Okay. Denise, take it away.
Thank you. In January 2014, the Interpretations Committee published a tentative agenda decision not to add to its agenda request to clarify the application of some of the presentation requirements in IS-1, presentation of financial statements. So this paper, agenda paper 12, includes a revision of the tentative agenda decision. And we received four comment letters, and as you know, a fifth late comment letter. And this last comment letter, we did not address it in the paper, but we addressed the other four. And well, we could see that all respondents generally agree with the drafting in the tentative agenda decision, with the exception of the analysis under the subheading presentation of additional statements or columns in the primary statements. And in particular, respondents ask the Interpretations Committee to clarify, one, the meaning of pro forma information, and also clarify the presentation of additional, well, clarify that the presentation of additional columns in the financial statements is not precluded by paragraphs 85 and 97 to 98 of IS-1. We analyze these comments and we agree. We agree with these two suggestions to clarify the meaning of pro forma information as hypothetical information in the financial statements. We also concur that we should make clear that the presentation of additional columns on the face of the financial statements is not precluded by IS-1. What is precluded is if these additional columns on the face of the financial statements include hypothetical information. That's what we think is precluded in IS-1. And we are asking whether you agree with the revised wording of the tentative agenda decision. Thank you.
Comments? Laurent?
I have several concerns with this agenda decision as a whole. The first one relates to the additional comments you make about operating profits. And I'm not sure what is the message that we would be conveying. Are we, with this agenda decision, conveying the fact that entities should present operating profit? Yeah, but it may be read as such. Then the second one, I disagree with the fact that IS-1 is clear that you cannot present hypothetical information. I would like to know the reference in IS-1 where this is written. And you also indicate that this would be prohibited on the face of the primary statement. So does that mean that you would be then permitted in the notes to the financial statements to have this? But moreover, I think that ISB has never clearly explained the extent to which you can add additional information in financial statements. And I would disagree with what you write at the following paragraph, particularly which relates to the addition of additional statements to observe that you would not meet the requirements of IS-1. Because, I mean, IS-1 is very flexible. It accepts that you can present additional information. It doesn't say that if you include in those financial statements possibly hypothetical information or future information, this is prohibited. It's not limited only to information from the past, because what is useful to the users of financial statements, or what are financial statements for, is to enable predictions of the future cash flows. So I don't have the same reading as you have about IS-1, about what's prohibited by IS-1. And I do believe that what the ISB has just decided to do and undertake research about presentation of additional information in financial statements, non-GAAP measures in financial statements, and so on, is the right project to carry out. And in the meantime, I believe that if we cannot go as far as you are going or proposing to go in an agenda decision.
Let me make sure I understand your point, and then I'm going to ask Philippe to come in on board member privilege. Conceptual framework defines assets, liabilities, revenues, and expenses, gains and losses. If it isn't one of those, it shouldn't be in a financial statement. IAS 1 carries forward, it seems to me, that principle. So if I wanted to present a column in the income statement that says, I decided that I thought it was really useful for people to see net income without advertising. It was a big deal during the tech boom. I don't think you can do that.
I think you can.
Okay. We disagree, but it won't be the first time. Philippe?
I'm not sure I can clearly state which one or two is right, but I have a question about the term hypothetical. Seems to me it can describe two different types of situations. And maybe I like ESMA and regulators to step in on this topic. It can describe a situation which does exist as of the date of reporting, i.e. a business combination took place, which I want to report as if it had taken place on the first day of the preceding year, to present 2 years on a comparative basis. What is hypothetical is not the existence of the transaction, is the date to which you give effect for the purpose of disclosing a certain vision. Second aspect is something that did not happen, but could have happened, or could happen in the future, to which you want to give effect for information purposes. And clearly, I think the second type of hypothetical presentation, which doesn't reflect a real transaction, probably is problematic. The first one, where you have a real information, a real fact, but you want to show it on a different basis, on a pro forma basis. And this is why I want to have a regulator step in, because under certain directives, certain regulations, you have to present pro forma information on an as-if basis. So are we precluding or prohibiting that such pro forma information reflecting a transaction as if it had happened as of the beginning of the year or the preceding year would be precluded from presenting on the financial statements, so should be presented in a different set of information or not? And if I test this view in terms of usefulness for users to understand the performance of the financial position and performance of an entity, I think it could be useful to understand the performance to have two periods presented on the same basis, i.e. with the same entities being reported. So testing this situation with the usefulness criteria, I'm not sure we could preclude one of the two.
Seems to me it wouldn't be precluded from the notes.
Why on the face? Why, if the test is usefulness, and unless it is specifically prohibited by any of our standards, if we want to base our guidance on the usefulness criteria, I'm not sure that usefulness criteria is so clear in terms of what you can do on the face.
Okay, I'm just going to go around the room this way, starting with Andrew.
I think we're on the right lines with this agenda decision. I do share a couple of the concerns that have been expressed already. On the reference to operating income, of course, that is a commonly presented subtotal, but there's some quite famous language in, I think, BC 56 of IES 1. I'm not sure if these comments somehow supersede that, or if that quite useful guidance in BC 56, in my view, would still stand. And if so, perhaps that should be referred to in the same amendment. On Philippe's point on hypothetical, I agree we should not refer to pro forma information. That's not clear, but I'm really not convinced that hypothetical is any clearer than pro forma as a descriptor. And the FRC letter refers to a common use of additional totals columns to remove non-recurring items. So I'm not sure if a subtotal that excludes non-recurring items is hypothetical. It's certainly conjectural to some extent. But I think we should either lose this reference altogether and just reiterate the principle in IAS 1. I think it is the same principle for additional line item subtotals as it would be for additional columns. Qualitatively, there's no real difference. It's just a way of disaggregating information. But stepping back, I think, to the discussion we had a couple of meetings ago, and the objective was to recognise, the discussion was that we've got to recognise there is some flexibility in IAS 1, but that is not unfettered flexibility. There are some clear principles, there are some principles in the standard which determine what you can and cannot do. But in using words like pro forma and hypothetical and trying to put a black flag against those, I think we are going beyond what we can probably achieve in an agenda decision.
Just for clarity, I just looked up hypothetical. Now, granted, I only have Webster's on my iPad, not Oxford. Involving or based on a suggested idea or theory. Involving or based on a hypothesis. Second definition is not real. Imagined as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So that, maybe in common usage, it's broader than that. But it seems to me that does pretty effectively limit it.
So does profit before non-recurring items meet that definition or not?
Those are disclosures. It's not
those
the
are
facts.
Disclosures.
Tony? Or sorry, I missed Reinhardt.
My comments are similar to the ones that Laurence made. I'm troubled by making reference to operating income in this agenda decision. And I'm coming from a North American background where regulators are fussed about including a measure like operating income because they're concerned about what gets into that measure and what is excluded from that measure. And so by putting in a reference saying it's a subtotal that's commonly used without the context of what would be included in that subtotal or not included, I think just opens up a can of worms that it troubles me. On the point about hypothetical, I guess I'm in a similar position to what Philippe said, because IFRS 3 clearly acknowledges that the pro forma information that is presented as if the combination had happened at the beginning of the year is useful. So if it's useful in the context of the notes to the finance statements, which one could argue is hypothetical because it didn't actually happen. It didn't happen at the beginning of the year. I'm not sure if that's useful. What precludes it from putting it in the as a column in the finance statements, other than perhaps the issue is, can one audit that? And then the third comment I have is with respect to the addition we have on proposed addition relative to presentation of additional statements. Like Laurence, I'm not sure what in IS-1 would preclude that. So if somebody includes a statement of further details of certain operating expenses, would that be precluded by IS-1? I would suggest no. And so again, I'm concerned by where the direction of the agenda decision is going beyond stating the principles, which I think is where we were trying to go with the last time we talked about this.
Tony?
I also think that we're moving in the right direction and emphasizing the principles in the agenda decision. I concur with what I think everybody has said. I don't see the addition of the reference to operating income is helpful. In fact, I think it may even be confusing because to me it just doesn't say anything. People do it. Yes, we know people disclose it, so what? So I'd be inclined to lose that. I also agree with Laurence and Reinhardt about the additional statement. I don't see anything that precludes an additional statement. In fact, if I think about companies in Brazil, they are actually required to include a statement of value added as part of their financial statements that certainly in Brazil are prepared in accordance with IFRS. So I'd be troubled by saying you couldn't have an additional statement sitting in the financial statements. Where I guess I'm slightly different to the others is that I am troubled by the notion of what-if accounting on the face of the income statement. I think it's a statement of the financial performance for the period, and what-if accounting is not a statement of financial performance for the period. And so that troubles me. I agree that it's helpful information, and I understand that IFRS 3 requires it. I think I would look to the description of what the statement of profit or loss is about and say I would very much prefer that what if or made up information is, if it's going to be included, presented in the notes. I accept that IFRS 3 requires it. Mm-hmm. And so I would be inclined to clarify around columns that there's nothing that precludes columns to exclude non-recurring items or whatever. But I prefer that sort of what if accounting was left to the footnotes.
Philippe, let me get in the rest of the board member committee members before I come back to you. Charlotte?
Yeah, I agree really with what Laurence was saying. I think it's gone too far. I don't think hypothetical information, or however you call it, is necessarily not relevant. So, and I don't think IS 1 says that. It just says you don't include things that aren't relevant. It's a judgment whether things are relevant or not. So.
John?
I mean, I don't believe hypothetical information belongs on the face of financial statements. I don't even think it belongs in the notes unless required by accounting standards to be disclosed, to be honest. I mean, what if type analysis on the face of your statement of historical financial performance to me is not appropriate. So I would agree with that. The overall concern I have with this is I'm not quite sure what this agenda decision is really saying that's not actually in the standard. And there is a disclosure initiative project on. I mean, I'm not sure why we're not just saying we're not dealing with this because the board has a disclosure initiative exposure draft out there that's dealing with the issues, because we're not actually saying anything here to me that's particularly helpful or useful that can't be read from the standard.
Just to clarify, Alan, you're in charge of disclosure initiative. Does it extend to the page that says at the top of it, statement of whatever we call it now? It does extend to the face of the statements?
Yeah. The disclosure initiative covers both the core statements.
And the notes.
Plus the notes.
Okay.
And this an issue that's similar to this is actually as part of the ED at the moment about additional subtotals, etc. So there's a little bit of spillover with the issue you're looking at now.
Okay. Sandy hasn't spoken yet, and then I'm going to let Philippe, Julie, and Laurence. Anton.
Okay. And Patricia.
And Patricia. Okay. Sandy, you get to talk before everybody else does.
Okay. I guess I would echo some of the comments that have been made with respect to operating earnings, but I've also been involved in a situation where operating earnings actually took some things out of equity and put them into earnings. So I think we're sort of saying operating earnings is just re-swizzling some things on the income statement, but I've actually experienced that not to be the case. So I don't think we actually know what that means, operating earnings, operating income. It means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So I'm troubled, as others have been, by the inclusion of that. I think it's fine to reiterate the notion about subtotals, but I'm really troubled about including all this other stuff in the financial statements, other than what's required by a standard. Someplace else, the pro formas on business combinations, because I don't think that while as accountants, trained accountants, we may understand what that all that means and the level of assurance over it or the level of assurance not included on it, I'm not certain all users understand that. And I also think it diminishes the credibility of IFRS in its usefulness, because you're saying, well, that's not useful, so I'm going to add something that really is. So I'm concerned. I'm concerned by including all this other pro forma or hypothetical or whatever, because I don't know how to interpret hypothetical. Is a level 3 fair value measure where nothing's observable hypothetical? Maybe. It's not real, is it? I mean, completely real. I don't know when you read that definition. But so I guess I'm just troubled by. And I may admittedly, I've been trained in the U.S., so schooled to say virtually nothing that's not audited goes behind that page that says audited. And so I may have a different cultural notion of that. But my experience sitting in the job that I currently have is that we may all have that appreciation of what the differences are, but I don't think users completely have the distinction of the quality of those numbers. That's just my experience.
Philippe, Patricia, and then the regulatory corner.
Excuse me, I'm also maybe talking as an ex-regulator to a certain extent, as much as a board member. I understand the concerns about those pro forma columns and the risk of confusion. So if there is two columns which are not clearly labeled, one being pro forma and the other one being actual, there is confusion. But I think in any case, regulators will take care that the columns are properly labeled and that there is a proper footnote to explain on what basis the pro forma column has been prepared to clarify that it is not the actual as per IFRS. Now, if you look at the press releases, earnings releases of most companies, what I see every day is that they are presented on a comparable basis, i.e. with the same perimeter for the 2 years which are being compared. And that tells me that there is an appetite from users to have such information. So do we want it to be purely non-GAAP? Purely non-GAAP, or do we accept it on the basis of usefulness? You say, why not accept it? Maybe not mandate, but accept it to be a gap or form of gap, i.e. presented within the financial statements, rather than outside where it is unaudited. And you raise the issue of the quality of the information. If it is in the financial statement, at least you can expect a certain degree of diligence from the auditors. It depends on jurisdictions. The ones I know, they are covered by the auditor's assurance. If it is outside, nothing. So this is why the direction which would be to say, no, we want it to be outside rather than inside, doesn't really satisfy me as with my two hats of ex-regulator and current board members. But now I've spoken too much.
Patricia?
Well, I don't know whether this, I think this is relevant to the conversation, but last month in the insurance project, the board felt it necessary to actually prohibit the display of premium information on the face of the profit and loss statement because they were concerned that it would be confused with revenue. So what that suggests to me, the fact that they felt they needed to prohibit that, meant that IAS 1 would have permitted it had they not prohibited it. Just food for thought when you're thinking about what this agenda decision should say.
Julie?
I guess 3 points. One is, and it really cuts to where what's written here talks about IS1 permits flexibility in presentation. In presentation of what? I think it's in presentation of the amounts that have been derived by applying IFRS itself in terms of recognition, measurement, and classification. So once you funnel your transactions through those filters, if I could say it that way, then you have some latitude in how you present what those filters spit out. But it's not flexibility in presentation to provide, to substitute, in essence, let presentation trump what recognition, measurement, and classification told you to do. So it told you something is an expense, but now when we get to presentation, it doesn't have to be an expense anymore. So I think the first thing is to be clear that the flexibility assumes you've run through the process of IFRS. It has spit out certain numbers and told you what they are, an asset or expense, and this is just giving you some latitude in how you write those down. But IS1 doesn't provide a substitute, or you run those traps and then you start over, you know, when it comes to drafting your income statement, if you will. The second point, though, I think that people could raise is, okay, let's assume I did that. I ran my transactions through IFRS, and I faithfully, you know, displayed them in accordance with it. I'm 100% compliant there. But on top of it, can I now voluntarily add additional information, you know, that would not classify things? You know, advertising is an expense in column 1, which is what I'm supposed to do. Can I add column 2 where it's not? You know, and kind of show it my other way. That I don't think IAS1 speaks to, if I understand it correctly. Correct me if I'm wrong. But certainly, regulators have preferences in that regard. You know, just obviously speaking for my own jurisdiction, our preference is no, not preference, requirement. So the question I think is, you know, would the board like to speak to that on a holistic basis? It sounds like they spoke to it on with respect to one number and insurance, but would they like to speak to it holistically? Perhaps that's something for the board to consider in the open ED. But not something that this interpretations committee can decide, you know, here and now. I don't think there's enough of a basis in IS-1 to decide that one way or the other. My third point, though, is a reminder about compliance, because I think overarching all of this, the standards in any regulatory jurisdictions, the notion of misleading investors is not acceptable. And I can tell you from a compliance perspective, when we look at sample filings in IOSCO, because we've done this, the compliance would lead one to believe that potentially, obviously we don't know all the facts because this is a, you know, desk review, we're not meeting with people individually, but when we look at examples around the world, it appears at times that the presentations are misleading. I mean, you've got you've got numbers with no explanation of what it is. You got income statements that don't foot from top to bottom. It's just a series of numbers with double underscores, but doesn't account for all the elements of what IS-1 would say belongs either in revenue or expense. So I think there is an overall message of you can't go to the point either within IS-1's provisions or potentially additional. You can't jump off the cliff to misleading and somehow use the standards as your defense.
Juan?
Thank you. A lot is already said by Julie. Regarding the columns, we understand that a lot of people believe that it is possible to include columns because you can include subtitles. However, we would like to mention that columns leave you much more flexibility when you include a subtotal, unless you have the example as presented by Julie, you have to count it. When you present an extra column, you have the possibility to leave all kind of things out. So there is much more danger for misleading, and if the board and this committee believes that you can insert columns, I certainly would ask the ISB in the disclosure initiative and the amendments to IS-1, where we are talking about subtitles, to include something about columns as well. That's what the columns. We have a preference to include the sentence about operational income, and because indeed what is said here, a lot of issuers present operating income, but to be honest, not in all cases it is operating income in the sense that there are certain operational items excluded or non-operational items included, what we sometimes see. So we would prefer to keep it and to make a reference what was already said by Andrew to BC 56, where there is some guidance what you should take into account and what not. The last issue is what is the purpose of financial statements? And when you look in IS-1, the purpose is to present fairly the financial position, the cash flows, and the financial performance, and you do that by a true and fair faithful representation of the transactions and other events and conditions, and that seems to me that it is based on a non-hypothetical basis, but based on the transactions and all the things happen. And we believe that it will be important to make a clear distinction what is the historical information and what is hypothetical and all kind of other things. And maybe you should make a distinction between what can be done in the notes and what can be done on the primary statements.
Okay, I'm going to try, given that we had budgeted 10 minutes for this time, which I think we recognized was probably over ambitious. I'm going to try and articulate a conclusion here. And if that fails, I'll bring in the three people who want to speak some more. Although Martin, in fairness, hasn't spoken yet. But I'm still going to try and reduce them.
Would we have announcements?
Please go ahead.
What we have announced so far, according to IRS 1, and that was also within the submission, is the question with regard to the equity result. And I guess it becomes more and more, well, prominent. Imagine now we have joint ventures, equity accounting. This equity accounting, is this equity result operating or is it financial income? On the other end, corporates have more or less cash surplus. They invest this cash surplus into certain investments, probably could also be some shares. Is this investment then an operating or financial result when it is accounted for at equity? And within the submission, and we haven't tried to find arguments why we have not answered this question. We tried to categorize all the questions with regard to functions, functional lines, and so on. But this question, whether we could split a specific, functional line item and divide it into operating and financial results, we haven't talked about. And again, I mean, according to my understanding of IRS 1, this would not be possible so far. However, having heard the discussion about what is possible with regard to additional line items, one could also consider saying equity result financial, equity result operating, equity result total. Is this possible or not? I believe this will become an important question sooner or later.
I hope later.
yep.
Point taken. I just hope it waits for the equity method project. Okay, let me see if I can build up a proposed solution. Julie stated, I think, the first principle. The left-hand-most column has to be the result, assets, liabilities, and the results of changes in them as required by compliance with the standards. You don't get to add or deduct. From the amounts, you may add line items that you help people understand, but you don't get to add or to deduct from the results. That's step one.
How about a box that has some deduction? That's what I see.
I'm going to step two.
Okay. Now.
Step two is you want to add an additional column, I assume, to the right. And I think everybody around the table can find some example of an additional column that is not objectionable. I mentioned last time we talked about the Brazilian case, they're required to present parent-only statements side by side with the consolidated accounts. To me, parent-only statements are an IFRS compliant presentation. So putting them in a column next to another IFRS compliant statement is not objectionable. I think some of the others around the table would move that line, but I don't see any consensus about where we would move it to. I think everybody has a different pain threshold on this one. So we have two possibilities. And then I'll let the last two players in here. We can significantly alter this agenda decision to say, yep, it's an issue, and thank God the disclosure framework will handle it. Thank you, Alan. That's plan A. Plan B is to work with the wording here. I've noted a couple of things that people found objectionable about the wording specifically here. But let me, so those are the two options that I think are before us. But before I call the question, I'll ask Laurence and Scott to come in for concluding remarks.
not to be misunderstood with my preliminary comments. My preliminary comments were saying this agenda decision is going beyond what the standard says. This does not mean that I don't think something should be done quite urgently by the IASB about what's appropriate to present on the face of financial statements and in the notes with respect to additional information that is not currently required by IFRS. And I do believe that the timetable under the research project, as it is way too long, in my view. But I do believe that this is within the remits of the IASB and beyond what we can do with IAS1. But I would urge the IASB to do something. I've spent a considerable amount of time looking at ESMA's proposals about non-GAAP measures, alternative performance measures, and I believe that one of the key problems we have is when we say non-GAAP measure, is that we don't know what is a GAAP measure. Nobody's defined what is a GAAP measure, and everybody has a different understanding of what is a GAAP measure. And who's better placed to clarify what is a GAAP measure, and thereafter to explain what is acceptable or not acceptable within financial statements.
So you would be a supporter of Plan A with an exclamation point.
Yes.
Meaning, yeah.
Sorry.
Having said earlier that we weren't going to tell the IASB how to do their own laundry. But Scott?
I have found this to be quite an interesting conversation. The fact that we think that hypothetical information might be okay on primary financial statements surprises me, to use a mild word. I think the language in IAS1 is clear that where you present information beyond the minimum that's required, that is to provide more detail, more clarity on the amounts that are already part of that statement. I don't believe pre-tax income without advertising expense is an amount that is already on the statement and that you are just providing more clarity. In that case, you are providing a measure that is not one that is part of IFRS and cannot even reasonably be described as being helpful, because operating income minus advertising expenses provides you with a measure that would never ever have happened. Because if you didn't advertise, you wouldn't have had as much revenue. So I don't see how that could even be considered to provide more information about financial performance, no matter how broadly you make financial performance. Frankly, I don't have a problem with those kinds of measures in the footnotes, as long as they have sufficient descriptions as to what the heck they are. Although in US GAAP, we don't allow that either. But having seen some of the descriptions for pro forma measures, I can see cases for various pro forma measures possibly being helpful in providing insight about the way the company runs its business, but not about the actual financial performance, which is what we're supposed to be focused on in the statements. So I would very strongly support that hypothetical stuff just doesn't belong there. If we don't limit the additional information to amounts that actually come from the financials, maybe I think the most important thing in my financial performance this year is that I hired a really good CEO at the end of the year. Maybe I want that on my income statement. Right? It's not going to add up with anything else, but by God, it's the most important thing about my performance in the year, and there's nothing that prohibits me, that limits me, to actual accounting numbers on the income statement, so why don't I put that on there? I don't know where the limits are if we don't say that the limits are things that are actually in the accounting records.
Okay. Philippe, Alan, and then we're going to call it to a quit.
I think there is an issue of scope about this agenda decision. Are we talking only about the current period, or are we also addressing columns, additional columns for past periods? I think all the discussion is mostly about what makes sense in the current period presentation. But as IS-1 requires at least 2 years to be presented, the preceding period has been presented and assume there is a change in accounting policies, which is significant enough to is applied on a retrospective basis. So the prior period is represented on a new basis, right? But also it has did exist on a prior basis. So some companies may want to have two columns for the prior period, one actual as previously presented and one as restated according to IS-8. The same applies for business combinations. You may find it useful to have the prior period on an actual basis and a new presentation as if the business combination had happened, which is not really hypothetical in a way because that business combination did take place. As I said at the beginning, hypothetical means different things to different people and certainly describes different situations. So I think if you really want to address the issue of columns, I think we have to be careful not to overlap to other situations and maybe only talk about the current period.
Alan, last call. Really last call, John.
Just an issue on timing, and Laurence, I agree with your concern because we keep hearing non-GAAP measures, and you know some people think that if you just you add a subtotal, that's non-GAAP, and there's a wide range of things. These are things that, like the hypotheticals, the sustainable earnings, the core earnings, and then something like sales per square foot, and then some other value drivers. And so there's a whole spectrum of things there. We're actually scheduled to have our first small group meeting discussion to educate board members on the 18th of June on non-GAAP measures and other issues. And just want to assure you the disclosure initiative is designed so that when things feed, we can feed them off the project without waiting for a discussion paper to be produced and then come back. So when we find we've got really good progress that we can make, we'll feed that straight into the process. So, and this is one we're conscious of.
Okay. Plan A. I didn't write it down, so I'm going to rely on a memory of the elderly. Plan A was to say, take off on what Julie said, that the basic financial statements are assets, liabilities, revenues, and expenses as produced by compliance with the standards that IAS-1 provides some flexibility on the presentation of those amounts, and that the presentation of, I'm glad Laurence is writing so seriously and so is Michael, the presentation of amounts beyond that, not even mentioning hypothetical or pro forma, the presentation of amounts or information beyond what is required is a subject for urgent consideration by the disclosure initiative. How many would support that as the agenda decision? Scott has a sour look. I don't like it any better than you do, but
nine.
Okay, that's the agenda decision. So we'll rewrite that, and I don't think we have to bring that back. You'll see it in when you review update. I told you, Denise, we weren't going to get that one done in 10 minutes.